I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Renee. How are you?
Hey, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm not as good as you are because I'm not in London, England, about to watch, commentate, partake in, and generally immerse myself in the Wimbledon championships for the next 2 weeks. And you are.
I am fully immersed. I am so immersed that there are bubbles around me everywhere. Yeah, I am really literally in the bubble, which is kind of a crazy thing. I've obviously been in some bubbles, but the Wimbledon bubble really takes the cake. We'll get into it a little bit as the pod goes on, just explaining how it works and what's going on and who's in it. And it's quite the experience, especially for somebody like me who's been here for, I played in like 20 plus Wimbledon championships and always stayed in the village. And now with this, it's a new experience for everybody.
So you're saying even if I were there, I could not have a double gin at the Fox and Hound with you and stagger home and want to throw myself off the first floor window like I did 2 years ago, because we would have to be in the bubble, which is where you are.
Yeah, we are. There's no getting around this. There's no dog and foxes. There's no, you know, pub visits or, you know, Bailey and Sage visits to get our lovely yogurts and meats and cheeses and bread rolls. And no, this is to the courts, back from the courts, back into the hotel. And I mean, literally everyone's like, what do you mean? Everyone? Like Roger, Serena, Novak, everybody is in this hotel. So, the feeling is I Andy Murray, and for someone like Andy Murray, for example, he literally lives like a 5-minute walk from the Wimbledon courts and he is staying in this bubble. I bumped into him in the bottom of the stairways and I was just like, mate, it must be so hard for you knowing that you live 5 minutes from Wimbledon and you're staying here. And it's at a minimum 35 minute bus ride or car ride into Wimbledon. And on most days it's 45 minutes to sometimes an hour. So it's a bit of a bear getting in and out of Wimbledon this year.
Well, as brutal as that is, especially for people who live in the village, there's a lot of former tennis players who live in the village. Boris Becker lives in Wimbledon Village. You're saying Andy Murray. You know, I get why if you are a tennis champion living not only in London, but that specific part of London probably makes a lot of sense, except for this year. But I will say the excitement, at least from what I've been able to gauge, not only my own, but everybody's for this year's Wimbledon, is reaching a fever pitch, partly because they didn't play one last year. They had every other Grand Slam but Wimbledon in some way, shape or form, bubbled or not bubbled or delayed or whatever. And you know, there really isn't anything as iconic. I'm in my all whites right now. I just happen to be, this is just what I dress in most days. I had a little hit with my son this morning, took our little slinger bag out to the courts, had a little practice session. But for me, the Wimbledon visuals, the optics, some of the news we're getting, it couldn't be more exciting. I've said before that Roland Garros is my Christmas. But I fully acknowledge that for almost everyone else, Wimbledon is their Christmas and you can't help but get excited even if it's not your most favorite tournament. So let's get into it. Should we talk about what's to be expected? Because I have some headlines that are dominating my mind and my social circle, but I'm curious to see what it's like on the ground in terms of the buzz, what people are talking about.
Well, I mean, for me, I mean, to be quite honest with you, this is going to be such a unique experience for anybody and almost like a US Open where, you know, the travel is long, getting to and from the courts, you know, people that like to hit early in the morning, like someone like Venus and Serena, who usually hit all the time at 10 a.m. no matter what. They're usually first on the court. You know, it's going to have to be a little bit different because it does. They're going to have to get on the bus. They're going to have to, or in a car, and the travel time is a lot more. So, you know, and the fact that everybody is in this hotel, I mean, Roger was sitting downstairs in the mess hall. It feels like an Olympics, really. That's how it feels like. And when I bumped into Andy Murray, that's what he said. It feels like an Olympics. You know, everyone's there. You're literally going downstairs, getting your food with everybody else. It's like a massive big buffet. I've never been on a cruise, but I can imagine it feels like a bloody cruise.
Gross.
So for the players, they're all having to go outside of their comfort zone. You know, someone like a Roger or Serena or Andy or any of these great top players, Novak, they have their team, they have their house, they have a chef, or they have, you know, their own food that they like to eat. This is, you have no choice here. You can order Uber in, you know, Uber Eats into the hotel, but, you know, everyone's going down. You can imagine everyone standing in a line, getting their food, going, sitting at a random table. And we have the Euro 2020 on. So a lot of the Europeans are watching the football on the big screen, and, you know, Italy played last night and you hear this screaming from the Italians over in the corner. So it's kind of like, it's like a junior tournament, you know, when you're a kid. So it's such a different feel. You see Serena sitting at a table with her husband and of course, Olympia, her daughter. I mean, they're on one table over there with her mom, and then you've got sort of like these little groups of people. So it's kind of like high school reunion for everybody.
That actually sounds pretty cool.
It is kind of cool for everyone in some respects, but also it's a different energy that you're expending, right? So if you're a type of player like Roger, you know, surprisingly, I think will handle this pretty well, even though he has his routines. Roger's a pretty social guy. Like, you know, he was down in the you know, eating area last night pretty late, like probably around 9:45, 10 o'clock. Came upstairs. He was sort of in the back of the bar area, sort of talking to other players and friends. And, you know, he's not a super solitary person. So I think for someone like him, he'll actually manage it okay. I think Novak's pretty reasonably social as well. It's just people that are used to sort of being alone and being by themselves and with their team. How much energy is it going to take out of them that they're not used to expending, right? And so I think it'll be interesting to see who comes out on the other side of that and who can adjust to that kind of a life.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that bears mentioning is, unlike the other Grand Slams where, yeah, the top players usually get a house anyway, at Wimbledon, almost everyone gets a house because there's very few hotels right in that part of Southwest 19, that part of sort of suburban London. So if you're in a hotel, you're 30 minutes away, kind of no matter which direction you head, whereas being in a house feels very luxurious. But at the same time, it's also sort of like, you know, ESPN has a few houses. You guys get flats just because, you know, again, there's not like a hotel. So the idea that, you know, the norm isn't a hotel under any circumstances, whether you're at the top of the game or the bottom in the Wimbledon context, really, really is interesting because players really can sort of like keep to themselves under normal circumstances. You know, and
yeah,
obviously,
for example, me, I can't work for ESPN and while Sam's in the tournament and in the bubble because I can't be in close contact with ESPN crew because they're getting tested as well, but they're staying in the village. So they're staying in a house. So they may come across, you know, the public, or they're sort of in a non-bubbled area. So I can't be in any contact with them or the crew from ESPN. So until Sam's out of the tournament, I am in the bubble and therefore I'm sort of like wrapped in bubble literally and not allowed to see or touch or be around anybody else.
Interesting because usually you do double duty at these tournaments where ESPN has the rights. You'll be running from a practice court onto air and then out to a match and back and forth. And it, I mean, knowing you very well, it seems like that kind of frenetic pace is really fun for you. But I will say the chance that you get to, you know, have a singular experience, one and then the other, is going to sort of be new for you.
Yeah, it's a little new for me, but I'll do what I can do, and obviously I want my player to do as well as possible. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, let's get into the draw a little bit.
The one draw that everybody I know who is a medium sized to small sized tennis fan, they are all texting me, DMing me, sending me screen grabs of Nick Kyrgios and Venus Williams creating a Voltron super powered mixed doubles team. Everyone's losing their mind about this. I'm so excited. I can hardly breathe.
Well, Nick did put out on Twitter that he was looking for a mixed doubles partner. So this is clearly the millennial way of asking someone to date on a tennis court is by tweeting. And of course, Venus was like, let's do it. And I have to say, what a team that's going to be, because, well, you won't be breaking their serve very much if they're getting their first serves in. Venus is obviously a multiple doubles Grand Slam champion and a multiple mixed doubles Grand Slam champion. So Nick's clearly putting his hand up to trying to win a Grand Slam in some way. And I love it. You know, I just think it's so fun, and we've had some great fun. It's probably the most talked about mixed doubles partnership since clearly Serena and Andy a couple of years ago. And then prior to that, probably McEnroe and Steffi Graf. So those are sort of the more memorable mixed doubles matchups. So it's going to be a blast. I can't wait to see them play together. And Venus is into it.
Venus is super into it. I mean, to your point, Venus has won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Wimbledon doubles titles. And yeah, she's one of them with you. And in
no, against me. I wish it was with me.
Yeah. Well, she's also never won a Grand Slam mixed title at Wimbledon. She's won it at the Australian and at the French. She's missing a Wimbledon for her title trophy case and the US Open. So maybe we will get Nick and Venus at multiple times. I mean, people have talked about how Nick Kyrgios, who is basically has not played on the tour for close to 18 months. I mean, the guy...
Well, he played at the Australian Open.
He played at the Australian Open and he lost in 5 sets to Dominic Thiem in one of the greatest matches of the year. And other than that, you know, tournament, did he play any warm-ups in Australia? Did he play any of the Sydney or Brisbane or Auckland or any of those? I don't think he did, but you could tell me.
No, I don't think he did, no.
So he's kind of just dive-bombing in here. But the thing is about Nick Kyrgios, and this is why he's such an amazingly fun player, he is capable of beating anybody on any day. He's never dropped a set against Novak Djokovic. As a floater in the draw on grass with the kind of talent and serve speed and variety that he has, I would not want to be in his part of the draw. Would you?
No, I don't think any player would want to ever play Nick in any form or fashion, especially on grass, because as you said, the talent, but the serve is just so hard to break and all that sort of stuff. So I don't think Novak's going to be worrying about him too much, though. I mean, Novak, to me, is the favourite at the tournament. I think he's actually going to win the Grand Slam this year. I think he's going to win Wimbledon, and I think he's going to win the US Open. I think he's going to have all 4 Grand Slam titles. Don't know if he's going to play the Olympics. That would make him the first since Steffi to do the Golden Grand Slam if he were to win the gold medal at the Olympics. But, you know, he looks fantastic. I've seen him the last couple of days. He looks fit. He looks healthy. He looks happy, relaxed. He doesn't look stressed out at all coming in here. So, look, he's going to be a huge, huge favourite to win the men's. And, you know, he's in sort of a section with maybe a Berrettini up that Berrettini's down the bottom half of the draw with someone like a John Isner. You know, big servers on this court. The court is playing really soft. And so the ball's bouncing quite low. It's going to help the big servers, but it's also playing reasonably slow. It's hard to describe it, but the ball is bouncing low. So anybody with a really good slice is going to do really well at this tournament, especially early in the tournament. I think as the tournament goes on, it gets hotter, it'll get harder, and it'll help guys from the back of the court a little bit more. But for me, it's an overwhelming, Novak's an overwhelming favorite to
yeah, win just looking at who's in his part of the draw, it's Diego Schwartzman. You've got Tsitsipas in there, which is always exciting because he's fun to watch. Although he's got an interesting match against Francis Tiafoe, who's had a pretty good grass season, actually. Feliciano Lopez, the grass specialist. He's always fun to watch. I don't know how far he'll go. And then Andy Murray is in his half of the draw, which is so, 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 so fun. And would be fun to watch Andy Murray make a deep run. Obviously, you know, he too has not had too many matches, you know, in the last year, just, you know, coming back from those multiple hip surgeries. So Andy Murray would be so, so fun. But yeah, it's hard to imagine anybody really stops Novak Djokovic.
No, certainly in his half of the draw, I feel like he's overwhelming favorite. Someone who might sneak through as on an American standpoint is someone like Seb Korda, although he had his knee taped the other day, which always worries me. He has against Alex Di Minaur, who won the lead-up tournament in Eastbourne yesterday. And Alex can be really dangerous on grass. So we'll see. Might be one of those guys. Whoever wins that match, I feel like might move through the tournament. So, but Berrettini won the lead-up tournament in Queens and looks great. I mean, just a monster serve and forehand and those types of games will do really well. And he has a beautiful slice backhand as well. So his game is not going to be easy to beat on this grass. And I think he's a player that will get through to the semifinals. And we'll see what happens in the bottom section of that particular part of the draw. Of course, Roger is in the bottom half of the bottom half of the draw. Look, hasn't had a great lead in, played pretty well in Paris and then pulled out, saving his body. And I think that, you know, we'll see how Roger does. He plays Mannarino, who actually, I believe, gave him a really tough match a bunch of years ago. So we'll see how he does with Mannarino in the first round. And there's Cameron Norrie, who made the finals of Eastbourne. He's in his section of the draw as well. So there are some maybe dangerous spots for him. But
Cilic,
I don't know.
Cilic is in that part of the draw, as is Medvedev, who you never know what you're going to get with Medvedev, which is why I like him. He, to me, is an honorary WTA player, as is Benoit Paire, because you just kind of like never know what's going to happen. And you know how much I love chaos. Chaos is a ladder, Renee. I'm not here.
Although he comes in also winning a tournament. So, yeah. I mean, you know, he's clearly happy to be off the clay. Let's put it that way.
Did pretty well considering he hates clay on clay. However, I'm ready for the Medi Slam. So let's see if he can bring it.
I'll keep an eye out on who's in the bar the most between all of those guys for the next few days. That might be getting an indication of who's going to be at the end of the tournament.
Insider tips, who's gonna make it. All right, should we talk about the women?
You know how I feel about talking about the ladies?
I love talking about the ladies. Simona Halep is not playing, so which is a little bit of a bummer because one of the most fun traditions at Wimbledon is that the woman who won it the year before leads off on center court as the first match of the tournament. Simona Halep, because she won it in 2019 and they didn't have it last year, will miss the honor by not being able to play. So I wonder who they will put out on the first match of the court.
Well, what I'm hearing is that it's going to be Ash Barty, the number one seed, which is a little bit of a surprise to me because, you know, in the years previous when the winner of the tournament and the latest one that I can remember is Marianne Bartoli, who retired not long after winning Wimbledon, that then went to the runner-up, which was Sabine Lisicki the following year. So I'm a little surprised that they don't have Serena going out there opening the courts, the day's play for the women on center court. I'm not quite sure why. Schedule hasn't come out for that day, but what I'm hearing is that Ash might be the one opening the court up. If not, we'll see. But yeah. Ash Barty was pulled out midway through the tournament in the French after just having phenomenal lead up to the French Open. My player Sam Stosur actually hit with Ash the other day, and she's moving around the court really well, hitting the ball great. Seems like the hip injury is under control. Fingers crossed that nothing crazy happens, but she looks really fit and healthy again. So for me, she's the favorite of the tournament.
Ash Barty does have a really tough part of the draw, right? Like, you know who else is in there who I think actually has like legit chances? Joe Conta, who won a grass court tournament a couple weeks ago, her first I think in a long time, and then Coco Vandeweghe, who's never not been a real threat in the last couple years because she's had injury after injury, but she can go far on grass, and that beautiful, beautiful serve and volley game like can actually I think make some make some trouble for a lot of people.
Well, actually, Coco and Ash, of course, won the US Open doubles a number of years ago together, and they were practicing today together. But you know, Conta will have to play Coco possibly in the second round. So Conta or Coco will be the ones that will get through that section, and we'll have to play Ash. Now, let's just have a beautiful moment here and talk about Ash's first round draw, which is unluckily for Carla Suarez Navarro, of course, who has gone through cancer and come back and had a tough draw in the first round of the French and lost that tough match against Sloane Stephens. She has to go out and play, but kind of fitting that she's going to actually play on center court in front of people as opposed to what happened here at the French.
I, for one, hope she wins.
Well, listen, it wouldn't surprise me. She is a great player and she plays very well on grass. It will be a tough one against Ash, but it'll be a feel-good story if she doesn't. It'll be a huge upset if she does it. But yeah, that section of the draw is super, super, super strong.
I didn't even mention Azarenka is in that part of the draw and Serena Williams is in that part of the draw. And there's, you know, a bevy of others like Paula Badosa, who's had a good spring. Like it's lousy with good players. It's
you forget to even talk about Krejcikova, who won the French Open. That is Ash Barty's fourth round opponent if they make it there. So, I mean, it, that section of the draw is just stacked.
And with, Kerber, you know, and Kerber, who just won her first title in a couple of years, what was that, 2 days ago in Bad Homburg. So, yeah, there's, it's not easy work, the top half of the draw. But, yeah, Jo Konta, I would love to see come through. Kerber, I would love to come see come through. I'm not totally ready to relinquish the youth yet on the women's side. I'd like to see some like mid-generation talents kind of reclaiming. So
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The top half of the draw is friggin' loaded, like beyond loaded, because, you know, you talked about all the people that we've just talked about. Serena's in the top half of the draw. She's in the very bottom of the top half of the draw.
Yeah.
And as you said, she has in her third round, the champion who she lost to 4 years ago, whatever it was, Angie Kerber. So imagine if they got through to cool. The third round, the two of them playing against each other. Oh my God, because obviously Angie is playing great again on grass. She loves the grass court. This, the court, the way it's set up will really suit her as well, because that low bouncing, it really helps her kind of flat ball striking. And obviously the lefty serve will just stay low and go away from her opponent. So Angie's going to be, if she's feeling confident again, this is a three-time Grand Slam champion. She's not afraid to go deep in a tournament. So Serena's not got an easy draw. And of course, we're not even talking about up that little section of the draw. If she were to get through the third round, in the fourth round, she could play Coco Gauff, who's been playing great tennis as well. I mean, the women's draw is so friggin' stacked. And I mean, I can't wait. The top half of the draw will, of course, play on Tuesday, and then they start playing from there Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So mid-tournament, of course, we don't have the Sunday off this year at Wimbledon, because I don't know why they decided to change that rule, but they're not expecting great weather on Monday. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm super psyched in general for the tournament to begin.
I couldn't be more excited. I mean, I think for me, it's just all about matchups. There's so many good matchups in the first, you know, couple of days of a tournament is always my favorite part, because you can kind of bounce around. I mean, ideally you're there so you can kind of go from court to court, but on my ESPN Plus, I will have about 10 screens open at every given time, just kind of checking on different matches, because the matchups are always so like sort of delicious, and contrast in styles and contrast in, you know, strategy and body size. You know, it's really fun to watch somebody like Barty or Sabalenka, who had a couple of matchups on clay this year, you know, and it's just like, oh, one's, you know, 18 feet tall and the other one's average height, but they're slicing and dicing and power and finesse, and it's great. So I'm super, super pumped. Hard to predict a winner on the women's side. Obviously, it'd be great to see Serena get 24. Anybody who you feel confident even saying you expect to see in the final? You've already mentioned Angie Kerber. Ooh, as somebody who's tough to get through, but I don't want to put you on the spot, but, you know, making a prediction on the women's side is so tough. Which is, I mean, why I like the women's game better, because we're not already minting a champion, you know?
Well, I mean, as I said, the women's top half of the draw has just friggin' got so many players in there that you could say if they got to the final, you wouldn't be surprised. Serena, Kerber, you know, Ash Barty, Konta, who made the semis here a number of years ago, and of course is playing great. And when Jo Konta, I mean, she's going to have the support, obviously, of the English crowd, and all the Brits will be behind her in a big way. And you know, when she's serving big and she's playing well, we were actually practicing next to her today. She just got that super confidence about her. So she's a confidence player. And obviously coming in here, winning a tournament means she's confident. And she can play well with the crowd behind her. She really enjoys that, which is saying something. But so for the British, that definitely is somebody that they'll be behind. the other half of the draw we haven't even really touched upon, but you know, you think about Muguruza, who's of course won Wimbledon before, a bit of an unknown. She has the possibility of playing Ons Jabeur, who won a lead-up tournament. I mean, it's just like so many, right? You talk about Sabalenka, who hasn't had a great, never really played well at the Slams. You know, what can she do? Sakkari is in that section of the draw.
Ali Risk, the grass court specialist, which is very rare to say for both a woman and an American, but Ali Risk tends to have great results. Kaya Kanepi, who's always sort of dangerous. Petra Kvitova, who loves grass and, you know, played a not too bad couple of warm-up tournaments coming into this either. You know, you just kind of look left or right and somebody's like, you said it, you wouldn't be surprised to see them being able to make it to the finals, but the there's a lot of dangerous lurkers in here, right? Like Sloane Stephens, is she going to play great Stephens tennis or not? She plays Petra Kvitova in the first round. So she's got to come out firing. And, you know, with Sloane, chances are she can. Like Madison Keys, same thing. On grass, she should be a no-brainer. She plays a Brit qualifier, Katie Swan, in the first round. You know, you wouldn't be shocked if Keys made it at least a couple rounds or lost in the first round, you know, Danielle Collins, same thing. So, you know, Kenin, we haven't even talked about Kenin or Iga Swiatek. Like there's just so many players who've won slams who could make it happen. And then you're kind of like, oh, you know, who's it going to be? Who's going to step up?
And one player we haven't even mentioned who I think will have the toughest match if Pliskova and so many players, if Kvitova gets through. Mm. To play Jess Pegula. And Jess Pegula is my outsider to do really well here because she's going to love the courts here. She's like 5-0 against Pliskova, who's up that section of the draw. If Pliskova can even get through a couple of matches, hasn't had a great lead up. And Ali Risk is in her section and she hates playing Ali Risk. So, you know, Jess Pegula has a tough one against Caroline Garcia, former top 10 player. So as we said, look, you could sort of throw, you know, all the names of women in a bag, pull out five of them, be like, yeah, could one of them win the Wimbledon title? And you'd be like, yeah, they could actually. So I'm just so looking forward to who's going to manage these conditions, as I said, of long days, getting in the bus, dealing with the bubble, the stresses of, you know, being around tennis players all day, who's hiding in their rooms, who's out socializing, who's sort of taking advantage of this moment. And then obviously the injuries are going to, you know, we'll see how everyone reacts body-wise.
I mean, especially on grass, everybody's, you know, slipping and sliding left and right, you know, as we saw in a lot of these, you know, in Halle and Mallorca, you know, everybody takes tumbles on grass. It's not out of the ordinary. So, you know, yeah, you can always have some freak injuries. One person I want to hear hourly, if not bi-hourly updates about, and you've already fulfilled my wishes for today anyway, is Benoit Paire. What's he going to be up to? Is he going to be hitting tweeners? Is he at the bar? Is he, you know, smoking hookah? Who knows what he's doing, but I want to know whatever that is. And I expect you to tell me.
Well, Benoit, I can assure you, will be doing a couple of things that you mentioned. He will be hitting tweeners. He will be diving. He will be, he won't be as annoyed at the umpire because I believe them is line, electronic line calling at Wimbledon. And it's so weird to see the cameras all set up the way they are here. And we will probably see him at the bar, Caitlin, more
I
than
wish
once.
I could be there with you all.
So, you know, seeing Roger in the back of the bar last night, sort of hanging out with everybody was really unique and awesome to see. And, you know, this bubble life is pretty interesting in itself. As I said, it feels like an Olympics. I feel like we're in our own little mini Olympic Games here at Wimbledon this year. But kudos to Wimbledon. They've tried so hard to get this right. And, the government here in England has been really tough on them, probably the most, other than the Australian Open. So they're trying to do their best. They've done a great job. The hotel's fantastic. And I have to say, kudos to the Park Plaza in London, because that's where the tournament, that's where the players are. I'm not giving away any secrets. Everybody already knows that there's press outside the hotel trying to take photos. But that the staff here has been absolutely amazing. And the most popular thing at the hotel is the, what we call in Australia and what we call here in England, the lolly jar area or the candy bar area. So very much enjoying that as a snack. And and there's gelato for the players. There's a golf simulator, which is also the funnest thing here. And every player is on that. Hopefully we won't have any injuries because of the golf simulator. But other than that, it's great.
Well, that's, you didn't mention Kentish strawberries. Are there Kentish strawberries to be had?
I haven't seen any strawberries at the hotel, but there are many at the courts. I did see Sabalenka walking away with 6 punnets of strawberries. Wow. And I've decided I'm going to call her Berry all week long. So that's her name. And if she makes the second week, I'm going to call her Straubs. And that's the deal. Cause she looked like she was literally taking them to go and sell them on the street. So
I want to push you to do better with those nicknames. So the next time we check in, why don't you give it a think and just come up with something that I feel befits your amazing brain, because I think those are only C minuses if we're honest with each other. I think the nickname game could improve. And as an Australian, I think you owe it to yourself to aim higher. I mean, Darren Cahill would come up with better nicknames than that.
And Berry Babe. You know, Berry Babe. Eh, you want me to call it Berry Babe?
Keep workshopping it. Okay.
Strobs Arenka.
Strobs Arenka has some, I'm getting there. That's a B. That's a strong B.
You just had to give me a second, mate.
All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate that you're going there. You know, they're already better than Brad Gilbert's, but I feel like you could just keep workshopping them. While we're doing some very light, in this case, dick kicks, I do think it bears mentioning just 2 other smaller things, because this really is our Wimbledon preview episode. It's not exhaustive, but obviously it's a check-in, and it's really nice hearing behind the scenes. Our friend Craig Shapiro gave you a lot of love the other day for doing such a wonderful Instagram behind the scenes tour, because you know this place like the back of your hand, both from playing, commentating, coaching, all the things. And it really is the cathedral of tennis. It's really a special place. So the more we can sort of illuminate people on what it's like to be there and play there and be behind the scenes there, because it's so unique, is just such a service. Light dick kicks are in order, I think, for my very, very favorite German man, Boris Becker, who, in addition to having a great head of hair and a very fun sense of humor, was really tone deaf in his Naomi Osaka criticism. He's going to be taking the BBC booth for the 19th year in a row. I felt like he was a little bit off, especially because he did not have any sort of critique for Roger Federer when Roger Federer pulled out of the tournament to preserve his body last time around with Roland Garros. He was quoted among many, many, many news outlets, New York Times, BBC, ESPN, et cetera, sort of saying like, Naomi Osaka can handle the pressure of a racial protest, which he gave her credit for, but then she can't handle the press. And it's sort of like, I don't want to sort of interrogate that, but I feel like Boris Becker could have done better. And then interesting news out of this whole PTPA, Novak Djokovic and Vasek Pospisil led not union of the men, and the ATP trading essentially in a pissing match. Not clear exactly what they're arguing about, because the PTPA still hasn't really come out with any specifics, although they did come out with a very interesting video. And the news has been revealed that they have a number of very interesting folks backing them, including the billionaire New York City hedge fund guy, Bill Ackman, who's very familiar to those of us who live in New York City, and one of his internet Twitter trolls he put on the advisory board. So it's sort of like the more that comes out about the PTAPA, you want to kind of be like, well, this could be a good union. The players certainly need it. Love to see them hooking up with the women. Maybe that's what they're doing. But every time they come out with something new, you're kind of like, but what? You know what I mean? I don't know if it's being chattered about over there at all, but it's just always so baffling where you're like, you have all this time and ability to get your ducks in a row. So why isn't what you're coming out with more impressive than this? You know, it doesn't seem like it's happening, but I wonder if the chatter has made its way to your side of the pond.
Not overtly. I mean, I'll be really honest with you. I think most of the players are so, and this is the problem with, you know, doing something like this. You have your little groups and your little cliques that are sort of trying to do something, but you know, 80% of everybody else is doing their own thing, and they don't really, I don't want to say they don't care. They do care, but at this point at a Grand Slam, they don't care. They're trying to win a Grand Slam. They're trying to do everything they can to get their bodies in order, to get their practice hours in, to get their food content, to like get their sleep, to get on a bus. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, there needs to be better representation as far as trying to get them together, obviously the women and the men. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, going back to Boris, I mean, you know, some people sort of, you know, I don't think sometimes I think sometimes before you speak, you need to sit back and say, you know, how is this going to look? And do I know everything? Do I know every part of this story with Naomi? So, yeah, I think you're probably, you know, obviously getting a lot of flack for it. But But I think with the PTPA, yeah, there was an opportunity, a golden opportunity through the last 6 months to really work together, particularly with the way that the tournaments have gone with, you know, the bubble and everyone's around. And I just think they went so one way at the start of the year that they've just got so much opposition in some regards from the ATP are not giving them any time whatsoever. I mean, it's like, it's a pissing contest. It's a pissing contest in the ATP. Forget about the WTA trying to even get equality with this players association. They're having problems with their own ATP. They're having problems with their own association. So I think until they can get that all under order, and quite frankly, I don't know if this is the time to do it or not with COVID. That's, you know, that's for smarter people than me to try and figure out, Caitlin.
I mean, your comments sound pretty smart to me, and they don't sound wrong. They sound like, yeah, this on paper is a really great idea. And obviously having a really strong, you know, ability to advocate and make sure the players are being treated well and that there's some parity is great. But it's just sort of like, oh man, every time this comes out, it's sort of like clown town again. And you just want to be like, hey guys, you know, you don't have to do this now because everyone else is trying to figure out, you know, how to get themselves in the best mental state about preparing. But also there's all sorts of interesting seismic things that are happening at the top of the sport with smart people trying to figure out how to make sure that tennis isn't blowing any opportunities. And the fact that it's fractured and the fact that, you know, it's a bunch of little fiefdoms that compete with each other is already part of the problem. So making a new one, if you're going to do that, make sure it kind of scoops up a lot of people along with you. And they really haven't done that. So anyway, I just thought it bore mentioning because now, from now on, we're going to be checking in. Like I said, I want updates about Kyrgios and Venus. I want updates about my boyfriend, Benoit Paire. I really would like to see him using that beard oil again. I feel like the beard has gotten a little unruly. So if you could pass that along, please let me know. You know, does he have a clothing sponsor? Does he want a clothing sponsor? I've got some people on the hook who want to give one to him. So, you know, I have his email, but I'm just saying, if you run into him at the bar, pass that along. You're going to be coaching Sam. She's got a winnable first round, but an interesting first round against who is it? Shelby Rogers. You know, there's going to be so much to talk about the tournament. So I just wanted to get in a few other things before we got started. But now that it's happening, you know, it's going to be exciting days.
Listen, I think the most important thing in this whole discussion is that we will be hitting tennis balls here at Wimbledon for the first time in a long time. And the Wimbledon courts look absolutely amazing. They're the best I've seen them in a long time. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they did to the grass over the last decade.
I mean, maybe not having a tournament there last year made them have 2 years of growth.
Maybe, I don't know. I just feel like the grass this year is even better than it. I think it's as good as it was 20 years ago. I have not loved the grass over the last like 10, 15 years. I mean, even though it's the best grass court in the world, there's something about it this year that just feels even better. And so I expect players that are coming into the net and being aggressive will do really well at this tournament. That does certainly suit someone like Roger. Mm-hmm. It just, can he get through, you know, best of five physically? He's not getting any younger, but, you know, just to see him and Serena just kind of waltzing around the hotel, you know, hanging out with the kids, it's a unique experience in itself. So Caitlin, I'm just excited, obviously, to be here. If anyone follows me on Instagram, they know my love for this place is like endless. There's nothing I don't love about it, from the flowers that line the courts to the wooden benches to the smell of the grass, to even the rain from time to time. It's just, there's no tournament like it in the world. And, you know, it's like picking a favorite child, which is your favorite. But for me, it will always be Wimbledon. So let's hope it's a great couple of weeks and we get some amazing stories out of it. And I'm sure we will, including Nick Kyrgios and Venus Williams playing next.
I have nothing to add other than I'll see you soon.
I'll see you soon, my friend.
And that's it for this episode of the Racquet Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Rogerian and the team at Acast. Find us at racquetmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be.
Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.